Training camps across the NFL are set to open within a week. The league and the Players Association have agreed on some health and safety protocols, but we still have a long way to go before we see actual games being played.
You know, I have a little bit of trepidation that to make sure it can all go off on schedule, they may not have it completely figured out.
That is Mike Silver. He's a longtime NFL reporter, currently serving as an analyst for NFL Network and columnist for NFL.com. He is also the co-host of the Pass It Down podcast with his daughter, Natalie. And he joins us on today's show. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19 and the Return of Sports. We'll get to Mike Silver in a moment, but first, let's update you on what's happening around the world of sports. The NBA announced on Monday that out of nearly 350 players tested in Orlando, not one tested positive for coronavirus. The 22 teams in the Orlando bubble begin scrimmages this week, with live games slated to tip off at the end of next week. In baseball, the Washington Nationals announced that Dr. Anthony Fauci will throw out the first pitch in the team's opening day game on Thursday night. The reigning World Series champs will face the Yankees in Major League Baseball's nationally televised season opener. And now to football, where the NFL and its players union have agreed to a plan that will have players tested every day of training camp for the first 2 weeks. To talk about that and much more, we bring in longtime league insider Mike Silver. Mike, thanks for being on the pod. Lots for guys like you to keep track of. On Monday, the league and the Players Association appear to have reached an agreement on testing protocols for training camps. And I think, crucially, the NFL has also agreed to have no preseason games, which I know is a sticking point over the last couple of weeks. So training camp, a couple of weeks away, supposed to be opening. It seems to be very promising news. Is it as good as it seems?
I think there's still a lot of skepticism, and not just from the player's side. I've been talking to coaches and GMs who are kind of like, is this really going to work? And of course, everybody would love to have football go on and, most important, have people remain relatively safe. But, you know, I think it's a tricky proposition. Even if you put the proper protocols in place, which they are, as you said, in the process of hammering out, and hopefully we'll get to a good spot. Football is not a socially distanced game, and there's a lot of breathing and panting and bodily fluids and close contact. And you know, those are the games. Practices presumably would have that. And then the other question is, you know, what kind of environment day to day are we looking at? It's one thing for the NBA to try to get a bubble environment, and that has its own challenges, but we're not talking about even 32 bubbles. There's a lot of trust going into the off-the-field comportment of not just players, but essential football people, coaches, and all that. And then, you know, in a world with false positives and false negatives and asymptomatic infection, what is the risk that it could spread pretty rapidly and pretty significantly over a short amount of time in one team environment? And what do we do if, all nine defensive linemen on the Minnesota Vikings are suddenly COVID positive, and their position coach, and it's Thursday and you've got a game on Sunday? I do think it would be worse to start and shut down than to start late. So I guess I'm just, I have a little bit of trepidation that in an effort to make sure it can all go off on schedule, they may not have it completely figured out.
Are you at least optimistic that training camp is going to start on time? Because that's kind of the initial dateline threshold that we have in front of us, right?
Well, the NFL, for a long time, they've been sending out full speed ahead signals, and obviously that's contingent upon making the players feel comfortable enough through the Players Association that we can do it. And I guess, it's one of those relative terms. Optimistic, I think they are, damn the torpedoes. They're in the mindset where they're going to start training camp, ideally for them, on time. I guess what the hesitation you're hearing in my voice is more of a societal based concern. In other words, we were hearing things a couple months ago like, hey, you know, by the time football's back, we're going to have testing that is totally different. It's going to be lick a lollipop, spit into a cup, get instant results type thing. And the whole country will have that. And everybody will be able to test and diagnose and contact trace and isolate. And, you know, the social distancing will have all paid off. And it'll be, and obviously, as you know, none of that's happened societally, right? We are in a ridiculously awful position, specifically in our country. It's revealed flaws, both, I think, in, you know, our general populace in terms of entitlement and selfishness and lack of sacrifice, and most glaringly in terms of our federal leadership or lack thereof. So, you know, we have a lot of challenges as a society. We have not made those advances in terms of testing and treatment that had been talked about and hoped for yet. And so I just think football would be great, but as with everything right now in America, it is a tricky proposition.
So also on Monday, the Jets and the Giants, they announced that they will not have fans in MetLife Stadium this season. I know some other teams, particularly the Dallas Cowboys, maybe back in the spring or earlier in the summer, were talking about having fans at least in a limited capacity. That's got to be totally off the table by now, am I right? Is anyone even remotely talking about having fans in the stadiums?
Well, I don't know. The lieutenant governor of Texas said not too long ago that he thought the economy was more important than human life. I don't even think I'm paraphrasing there. It's essentially what he said. And there have been some pretty ridiculous decisions and statements, callously so, from certain people in positions of authority. So I don't know. I mean, to me, obviously it would be great to have fans or some fans. Is it safe? Is that feasible? You know, again, it doesn't seem like societally we're in a place where adding people to the equation who don't have to be there is a great idea right now. So, and you know, if testing makes great advances, if the rates go way down, if we can, you know, have a way to quickly test and isolate, you know, when people are infected, then maybe we can start talking about social distancing scenarios in stadiums. But yeah, I mean, if you put me in charge of all the states and all the stadiums, I would probably say, of all the things we're trying to do, we should probably not worry about the fans at this point.
That's actually a good solution to this whole thing. Just put you in charge.
I mean, it wouldn't be subtle. It would be a short reign, but it would be very decisive, Seth. And I think, you know, you'd be getting a lot of very decisive information in very stark fashion. And I promise I would not tell anyone to inject bleach or anything, you know, of the sort. I'd probably just put Fauci in charge and let him do it. He seems to, you know, have a shred of expertise in this area dating back, you know, several decades. Just a thought.
I can put you in charge. I have that authority. We saw with the NBA and Major League Baseball vast differences on how ownership and a players union can work together. NBA has been pretty seamless, all things considered. They've had a couple of bumps in the road, but they're pretty much on the same page. Baseball was a total disaster. So given all of the issues, big and small, financial and health, that still need to be worked out here, where does the NFL fall on that scale as far as labor relations?
It seems to be in the middle. And listen, I don't want to, you know, I know you would agree with me on this. Sometimes it's tempting from the outside to say, oh, the damn union, they're being difficult. I mean, a union's job, not just in sports, is to not only raise difficult, you know, issues, but to advocate fiercely for the well-being, financially and most important, health-wise, of its dues-paying members. And so, whether that's fighting for Latrell Sprewell after he's been suspended for choking his coach, which would seem to be a weird position to be in, but is, you know, a union's duty, or trying to ensure that players who come back to work are in the best possible position not to get themselves and their loved ones infected with COVID. That's a union's job. So, you know, I would love to see it be seamless. I would love to see everybody come back and play, but, you know, I don't necessarily begrudge unions for, you know, doing their job. And listen, you know, it is, it is definitely true that football, owners have had it very, very good for a long, long time. Franchise valuation has been insanely profitable for them. It just goes up and up and up. They are guaranteed a profit, which by splitting the TV money, just take away the attendance and all that, they're guaranteed a profit every season, no matter how bad they are, just from their share of the TV loot. So, certainly the NFL owners have had it real good for a long time. And, we all want to see football played if possible, but, sometimes it's complicated.
The fact that the NFL was able to make this announcement on Monday, Mike, about the health and safety issues would seem to indicate that there's been significant progress and quiet on the financials of all this, which is complicated, especially if you don't have fans in the stadium. And of course, that was a very, very tricky issue with baseball. Is that your understanding, that they're in a pretty good place in terms of figuring out the money side of this if and when there's actual games?
I'm not positive on that, because there are a lot of very, complicated issues, and essentially somebody's going to get the shaft in terms of, is it players with guaranteed contracts who are going to lose some of those protections, or is it players with non-guaranteed contracts but who will be in better positions, or what happens if the season doesn't get played, do contracts toll? I mean, there's just a lot of things to work out. I know the union's position has been, we'll figure the financials out second. Let's get the health and safety protocols done first. So it may just be a case that that's what's going on, and then they'll get to the tricky financial stuff. I don't think any of it's insurmountable. And I would just say this, the players have an incredible amount of short-term leverage. There is no force majeure clause in the collective bargaining agreement. The contracts don't have it. So players have the right to get paid for either playing whatever games there are this year, and in some cases for not playing. And they might face some ramifications down the road if they, stay firm on that and exercise all of their leverage. But it's a game they could probably win, certainly in the short term. Now, historically, when the players have had incredible leverage over the owners in the NFL, the NFLPA has been pretty reasonable and not tried to, rub their face in the dirt, the league, and they've worked things out and dealt from a pretty good place. That hasn't always been the case the other way around, by the way, but traditionally, the players' union has not just seized every advantage. So if you put all of that together, I believe these things financially can be worked out if they arrive at a point where the health and safety is close to what they want. It sounds like with zero preseason games and at least starting out with daily testing that, the owners have made some significant concessions, which are the right concessions.
Well, look, Mike, I mean, I've known you a long time. You're one of my best friends in the business. As usual, I'm like the sunny side up Pollyanna, and you're throwing cold water on and realistic actual facts and information on me. So bottom line here, man, you cover this league. You know everybody around this league as well as anyone. What do your bones tell you? Are we going to have an NFL season?
It's really, really it's a question I ask a lot, to myself. I talk about it with coaches and players and owners and GMs. And I don't think people know. I think there is a very, very strong sense on the league level that, hey, we're doing this. And that's the owners essentially saying, we are going to play. We need to play. Coaches and GMs would like to have football, but they are the ones who are on the front lines and trying to figure this all out logistically. And it's been hard for them to think about, like, this is a lot and how is this going to work? They're certainly receptive and want it to work, but they feel challenged. And players certainly don't want to give up money, or, careers are so short, they want to play. But, there are a lot of players who are understandably wondering, even if I get it statistically, I'll probably be okay. But I've got a baby at home, or my wife's pregnant, or my mother-in-law lives with us, or, you know, and on down the line. So, you know, the players have a right to have these very legitimate concerns. So I think it will start, and I think we will have, you know, a good faith effort to have it continue unabated, but it's hard for me to forecast what it's going to look like if there's a mini outbreak, or if one team can't play for a week or two, or if, you know, all of a sudden something tragic happens that causes us all to, you know, to take a pause and wonder what's going on. And I guess, you know, I could give it more thought, but I do spend more time worrying about our nation and, you know, our democracy and the well-being of our citizens. And I know you do too. So they are not isolated issues. It all is woven together. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe by the time the Super Bowl is either played or scheduled to be played, maybe our country will be in a much better, more hopeful place. I guess that's that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I'd love to end it on that hopeful note, but I do have to ask you one more question, slightly off topic. As you know, I grew up a rabid fan of the team, soon to be formerly known as the Washington Redskins. I think I would be more accurately known as a former fan, because I don't like a lot of the things going on in that franchise. What do you see moving forward for that organization, both in terms of the name change, as well as the fallout from the Washington Post story from last week about allegations of sexual harassment from several staff members?
Great question. You know, I went to, when I got to Cal in 1983 as a freshman, Ron Rivera was not only the best player on the football team, which was not great, but he was kind of like Jefferson in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was by far the best player on the football team, like five times better than the next guy. So I've known him a long time, and he's probably one of the people I would say who is uniquely qualified to have a chance to navigate this situation. And obviously the name, I don't think that's going to be a wrenching thing. I mean, just, you know, people keep asking me what I want them to be called. I'm like, hey, anything that doesn't have to do with skin color would be great. Like, how about something non-racist? Like, you know, I feel like whatever they call the team, it's going to be way better than the previous name, and, you know, life will carry on. But, you know, the article that came out in the Post was troubling, and, you know, it speaks to a culture that is not what, I think any of us are looking for in 2020. And, you know, it doesn't look like the NFL currently is investigating it with the same zeal that they have other things in the past. They're letting Daniel Snyder have a lawyer that he hires come in and examine the culture. So, you know, I don't know. I think if more things come out and it's, you know, some things traced directly to Dan Snyder, you may see a situation like with Jerry Richardson in Carolina or Donald Sterling with the Clippers, where there is so much outcry internally among other owners that maybe a sale would happen. But I think right now, Daniel Snyder is, if not clinging to the name anymore, he's still clinging to that team. And I do think Ron Rivera is the right guy for a choppy situation.
Well, Mike, if nothing else, doing this episode today got me a chance to reconnect with you. I'm going to have to explain to our listeners under 50 the Fast Times at Ridgemont High reference, but that aside, you know, I love you and I respect your work so much, and I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and best of luck down the road. Hope to see you soon, pal.
Thank you, Seth. And if all goes well, I have this vision that I'm turning on my television set in March of 2021, and there is a selection show as we get ready for March Madness, and Seth Davis, my favorite broadcaster, is up there helping me break it down. Maybe even the Cal Bears could somehow sneak in. That might be a lot to ask. Maybe the UCSB Gauchos can win the Big West tournament and get in. I'm a UCSB dad, so I would love that. But let's hope that by Selection Sunday, we are in a much better place.
That would be great. That would be great. Mike, thanks for doing the show.
Thank you, Seth.
My thanks to my good buddy Mike Silver for joining the show. Remember to listen to Mike's podcast, Pass It Down, which he co-hosts with his daughter, Natalie. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.